Thank you. Hi, I'm an alcoholic, a member of the Fifth Tradition Group in Scarborough, Ontario, and my name is Jay Albee. Hi, everyone. I want to thank the group for giving me the privilege and the honor of speaking here this afternoon. And I do believe it's a privilege and an honor because everything good and decent in my life today is because of Alcoholics Anonymous and a loving God that I found through you people. So I'm grateful to be here. I'll get right into it. So 1992 was the first time I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was on some charges and they wanted me to go to treatment. Now, I didn't want to go to treatment. I didn't want to say I was an alcoholic, much less accept spiritual help. And I believe at that time, see, I was desperate. And the only reason I remember my lawyer saying, like, just go, they'll drop the charges. And I'm saying, like, there's no chance that I'm going to say I'm an alcoholic. And the only reason I went was my mother begged me to go. And I end up going. But at that time, see, I was desperate. I've never gotten sober being desperate. When I'm desperate, I'm a good complier. When I'm desperate, I'll say I'll go to treatment. When I'm desperate, I'll say I'll go to a meeting. When I'm desperate, I can borrow some money. But when I came back in 2005, I was hopeless and I was desperate enough to do anything you people suggested that I do. And but I couldn't understand, like, I think it says deep down, every man, woman, child is the fundamental idea of God, but it's blocked by calamity, pulp, and worship of things. In that time, there was a lot of things that I worship, money, power, prestige, alcohol, outside issues, and but I couldn't understand. I'm not here to tell you. I had a lot of fun with drinking, but what happened was, it began to be like a full-time job. And what happened was, like, I drink for, I drank for years, but there'd be certain points in my drinking where, like, it wasn't too bad. And my brain would lie to me and tell me, hey, you know what? Maybe it'd give me false hope that I wouldn't have to change. So for me, not till I start to go through the literature and, it talks about the moderate drinker. They can take it or leave it alone. The hard drinker, sufficient reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, and warning of a doctor becomes imperative. But what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. That's what happened to me. He may become a continuous hard drinker. But at some stage of my drinking career, I began to lose all control of my liquor consumptions once I started. And at times, it felt like I was regaining control. And those intervals usually brief or inevitably followed by still less control and time to pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. So, I did a lot of ugly earthly things for a price of a drink. So lack of power is my dilemma. And what do I do? Every morning, I connect to that power. Like I did this morning, I did my prayers, my meditation, and then I do positive affirmations. And I got up this morning and I thank God for grace. I thank God for prosperity. I thank God for health. I thank God for mercy. I thank God for the beautiful family that I belong to. I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thank God for gratitude. And when I came into the ruins of Alcoholics Anonymous, I belonged to a group with a lot of long-term sobriety. And they told me gratitude is an action. Don't tell me how grateful you are. Show me how grateful you are that I've been a user and a taker all my life, and that takers lose in life and givers win. So you make up your mind what you want to do. And it's my experience, and that's all I'm going to share from the room, is that the more I give, the more I get. And it's not in material things. It's not the new girlfriend. It's not the new car. It's not the new house. What it does for me, see, I'm enough the way I stand before you here today. So it doesn't really matter to me if I drive a Ferrari or I take a bus. It really doesn't matter to me today if I have a piece of bread with a tomato or I eat a steak. It really doesn't matter to me when I walk into a room what people think about me. I don't measure myself on a better and less than basis. And the more I'm sober, the more I realize that's a gift of God, Alcoholics Anonymous, and sobriety has given me, that I'm enough. Anyway, a while ago, somebody asked me, Jay, what was the best day of your life? And for me, it was February 6, 2005, and that was the last day I drank. And the loving and powerful hand of God, and I feel enough despair that I crawled into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I gazed at a miracle, which I didn't understand. And through you people, the 12 steps, strong sponsorship, meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book, the fellowship service, you've given me a design for living, which works in good times and works in bad times. And the central fact of my life today is the absolute certainty that the Creator has entered my heart and my life and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He's commenced to do the things for me, which I can never ever do for myself, and I'm very grateful for that. Anyway, my sponsor used to say that there's three things you should do when you get in front of the room is be yourself, do your best, and practice the presence of God. And that's what I'm going to try to do here tonight for the next 15 minutes. So my life has been brought to a place of daily surrender. My life has been brought to a place of acceptance, mindfulness, presence, not attached to yesterday, not attached to tomorrow, but present with breath, with you, and with God. It was never like that. I was always in yesterday, and when things work out, tomorrow will be okay. You know, in our literature, it talks about God doesn't make hard terms for those who seek him. When I'm living present right now in this room, terms aren't hard for me. It's when my mind will get involved. And that's what happened because alcohol had destroyed the love of my family. It had destroyed the love of my friends. It took my ambition. It took my self-respect. It took every love, every dream that I ever had. You know, I had the morals of an alley cat, and my soul was black as the ace of spades. But by coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and doing all 12 steps and growing and understanding and effectiveness and enhancing the spiritual experience that God has given me, it has erased, it has dissolved a lot of those things. Today I'm a son. Today I'm a brother. Today I'm an uncle. Today I'm a friend. Today I have loves. Today I have dreams. But when it comes to alcohol, I'm insane. And I don't need 20 questions to tell me I'm an alcoholic. Believe me, once I pick up a drink of alcohol, I have little or no control over the amount that I drink. And my life revolves around the next drink. I have a drink in this hand, and I'm not worried about that drink. I'm worried, how am I going to get my next one? And I lie, I cheat, I steal, I manipulate, I do whatever I have to do to get that next drink into me. And one of the definitions of insanity is to believe a lie, something that's not true. And every morning I'd wake up and I'd say, there's no way I'm going to drink this morning. And you could connect me to a lie detector test and I would have passed that test because every fiber in my body and with all my heart, I don't want to pick up that drink. And then my imagination would be in conflict with my will. And when imagination is in conflict with will, imagination wins all the time. And the switch would go off, and I start thinking what my father did to me 20 years ago, what this person did to me 15 years ago, what this person did to me 10 years ago, what this person said to me last month, what this person said to me last week. And the next part of my day would be I'd be getting even with people. And from there, I'd be looking for people to piss me off. And if you didn't piss me off, I knew exactly what you were thinking about me. I was full of hate, anger, resentment. From resentment, I went into self-resentment. From self-resentment, I went into self-pity. And from self-pity, I went into self. Hey, I could not stand myself by the time I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was full of shame, remorse, guilt. I was irritable, restless, and discontent. And the only thing that gives me a false sense of ease and comfort is by picking up a drink. I need to really fly right away. And I understand today that I was suffering from a spiritual malady. And I remember being new, asking my sponsor, like, what's this spiritual malady? And he said, Jay, your spirit is asleep right now. And this is how you feel when you don't have alcohol or God in your life. I was having trouble with my personal relations. I couldn't control my emotional natures. I was a prey to misery and depression. I couldn't make a living. I had a feeling of uselessness. I was full of fear. I was unhappy. I couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. And that's exactly how I felt. And what's happened to me as a result of the 12 steps is my spirit has awakened. I've had a change in personality through time, sufficient enough for me to recover from alcoholism. I've changed the way I feel, changed the way I think, my attitude and outlook on life, people, place, and things. I'm not the same person that came into the rooms of alcohol. Alcoholics Anonymous just over 21 years ago, and thank God. Anyway, I grew up in the East End of Toronto. I'm the oldest of four kids. I grew up in an Italian family, and to be blunt, growing up, I hated my father. My father always told me I was stupid, I was good for nothing, I never amount to anything. And as a kid growing up, I believe that. I remember going to school and the teacher would ask the kids, you know, what do you want to become? And the kids would say, you know, I want to become a doctor. I want to become a lawyer. I want to become a hockey player. I didn't want to become none of those things because I was paralyzed in fear and I had no self-esteem. And that's what alcohol did for me. I'm not one of these guys that picked up a drink. I felt taller. I felt better looking, or I felt like I could dance. When I picked up a drink of alcohol, I just felt normal. I needed more alcohol and I got less and less of that feeling. And I understand today I still drank for the effect produced by alcohol. alcohol. See, I could come into a room like this, my stomach would be in knots, I feel awkward, out of place, my hands would be sweating, and I can go into my kitchen, put three or four drinks into me, and walk back outside and feel like I belong. Same room, same people, without alcohol, I cannot stand to be in this room, and it changes my perception of reality. And I do not drink because of what happened to me as a kid. I do not drink because of my environment. I do not drink because of the things I've done to people and the things people have done to me. I drink because I like the effect produced by alcohol, period. Anyway, growing up, my dad used to have a little supermarket in the East End of Toronto, and the store was open 24 hours a day. And when I wasn't going to school in the summer, I worked midnights with my uncle. And my uncle's friends used to come around at night. They were much older than me. They never worked. They always had women with them, and I was attracted to these guys. Now, here's the insanity. In the 1970s, my father has a $1 million business, and I'm thinking, what a loser. And I'm thinking people respected those people. I understand today, people just feared those people, and people respected a person like my dad. And going through my inventory, I understand today they were my first addiction. I like the effect produced by them. Again, power, prestige, women. By the age of 15, 16, I seen a lot of things, and I did a lot of things that no 15, 16-year-old kid should see or do, and affected my life immensely. By the age of 16, I had two brand new Cadillacs, all the material things one can have. And I don't tell you that to impress you. I tell you that 2 days before I went into treatment, I broke into my mom's home and I stole their checkbook and I began to write checks. My mother, who I would jump in front of a car for, I would tear out my heart for my mother. And you put a drink of alcohol on me, and I do not care. I'm like a bulldozer. I'll bulldoze over anybody to get that next drink into me. And I understand today, which I didn't understand then, that I was beyond human aid. See, no matter how much I love my mother, I can't stop. My brother telling me, hey, if you pick up one more drink, you're not going to be able to see your niece. I'm on bail. Part of my bail stipulation is I cannot consume alcohol. And you know what I do. You're starting to get to know me because at that time, I'm beginning to develop that particular mental twist, and I have a strange mental blank spot. See, I can't bring with sufficient force into my consciousness the suffering and humiliation of a day, a week, or a month ago. I was without defense against the first drink, and I didn't even know it. Anyway, the first trouble that I did get into alcohol, I used to hang around a social club in the East End of Toronto. Again, I got drunk one night. I was being loud, obnoxious, and they said, Jay, you should go home and sleep it off. And I called a friend of mine, and we were driving again in the East End of Toronto, and we hit a guy and we killed him. And I'll never forget, he came into the glass and I was covered in all little pieces of glass. And the first thing that came to my head, I don't use foul language from the podium, but the first thing that came to my head was, what a so-and-so, he ruined my pants, self-centered to the extreme. And not till it was like Mother's Day and I couldn't look at my mom, these feelings were starting to pop up. And I remember phoning my sponsor saying, like, what's the matter with me? I have no remorse. He said, Jay, your whole life, your feelings and your emotions, you've been boxing them up inside. And right now you're like a ravine full of junk and dirt. And as you go along, you do your 12 steps, you're going to pick up that junk and that dirt. And if anything falls in there, and you're going to pick it up and take it out. And one of the reasons why I couldn't look at my mom, his mother's father's brothers and his sisters were across the street in a restaurant watching. His father came running across the street. He's holding his son, blood's coming out of his mouth, blood's coming out of his ears. And he's crying, son, please don't die. Anyway, I end up opening my own club, and I haven't got much time. And what happened was, there was an attempt made on my life. They threw a bomb through my front window, and I got away. And it was in all the newspapers and news that in Toronto that me and my partners were known to police. And here's the kicker, right? My whole life revolved around what you thought about me. So what I do, I went and opened up across the street from where they bombed me because I couldn't show you that I was scared. And meanwhile, I was paralyzed in fear. It could have been one out of 1,000 people that did it. And the only solution I have to that fear is by picking up a drink. And here's the sad part, right? What I put my family through, we talk about treating like your family like friends or friends like family. I didn't even treat my family like friends. I was the type of person, we had an ice storm here years ago. My mom would phone me and say, listen, we need milk. And you'd say, call me. And I'd say, call my brother. And you'd say, call, we got to go to Montreal. And I'd say, come pick me up. And for me, not till I realized this going through my step work. Like, see, my whole life revolves around what you think about me. I don't care if you live or die. It really doesn't make a difference to me. I need your approval. At home, I have my family's approval, and I'm a user and taker of people. And the people I use and take from the most is my family, because I'm fortunate. I come from the type of family. My mother was an enabler. My mother loved the son the way a mother should love a son. And she kept giving, and I kept taking. She kept giving, and I kept taking. Maybe Jay's going to get it this time, till finally I broke her heart and she said, "You know, Jay, you're no longer welcome here." And for my mother to do that, you don't know what it took. And I'll take you right near the ending. What happened was, one of my best friends was on the run from the police, and he was in Florida. And I used to go quite a bit back and forth to Florida, and I went to see him down there. Now, I asked him if he wanted to go out for a drink. He said, "Jay, I don't drink anymore." And now I don't know if he was in a 12-step program or not. And he ended up coming back to Toronto. He ended up giving himself up. He ended up going to the penitentiary. And years later, after getting out of the penitentiary, he was a mess. And what happened was, he had opened up a bar in the area that I grew up in, and I was in Florida, and I came back, and he asked me if I wanted to go out for a drink. But I'd been drinking and using alcohol in other forms for 2 or 3 days, 4 days, I can't remember. And I told him that I'd meet him. And what happened is, I fell asleep. Now, my sister, she owns a flower shop in Toronto, and I got a phone call from my sister the next morning that he had hung himself. His brother found him hanging, and a short time later, his kid found his brother with a needle in his arm, overdose. And you talk about explosion. What happened to me was, I imploded. I began to go crazy. And where I come from, you don't talk about stuff like that. And in my head, I said, even if I say something to somebody, they might have thought that I was involved. And what happened is, I began to go crazy. And I was in the bar business. I had another bar in a small town, and my partners thought it'd be best for me to go
Oh,
out
that's
there was
great.
worse, because there was nobody there to watch me. And on the top was like a cafe, and on the bottom was like a banquet hall, and I just go downstairs and drink myself to oblivion. And what happened now is, my body's starting to shut down. I'd be walking along the street, I'd have to hold on to a wall. Blood was coming out of everywhere possible it could come out of. I went to see a doctor. The doctor asked me if I was drinking or using drugs. Of course, I'm a liar. I said no, and he wanted me to go do some tests. Now, my fourth step inventory is cancer on my fear list. My mother's a cancer survivor. I've lost all my grandparents to cancer, aunts and uncles. And from the paranoia, I began to convince myself that I was dying from cancer. And what happened is, I got my time's running out. I took the point is that I can't even believe I did this. I took my mom and my best friend. It's called Sunnybrook Hospital here. It's a cancer hospital. I walked in and I said, "You know, start the chemo on," because I believed I was dying. I was in psychosis, and my mom's crying. My best friend saying, like, "Listen, we got to get you out of here. I can't comprehend anything." And now my partners are starting to get fed up with me. It was February 6th, 2005. It's my remember when I walked in and I got beat by pool balls, and I was lying on the floor, and a relief went through my body. You know, I thought I was going to die, and I said, "Thank God I don't have to live like this anymore." And they picked me up and they cleaned me up, and they said, "You know, Jay, you better get some help, or next time you won't be so lucky." And my partners weren't the type of people you messed around with. I've been in Kingston Penitentiary for shooting the guy 5 times in the head. The other, I've been in the penitentiary for trafficking cocaine. As they were beating me, they were crying, and they said, "Why can't you stop?" And I gave the first honest answer that I had given in a long time. And that was the last Jay drink. On February 7th, a loving God separated me from alcohol. I was a full-blown alcoholic addict. I was suffering from a hopeless condition of mind and body. If I live to be 100 years old, I'll never look as old as the day that I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. He took me from that scrap heap and he placed me before you here today, recovering from a hopeless condition of mind and body with some dignity, experiencing the glory of God. I get to give it back to newcomers, and I walk with my head high and shoulders square because of the power of God that I found in the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. On February 6, 2005, my life revolved around the next drink. Every time I pick up a drink, the craving intensifies, and I'm never satisfied. And I have a mind that wants to kill me. My mind insists that I pick up that drink, no matter the consequences of the day before, the month before, the doctors, the jails, the institutions. My mind insists that I pick up that drink. And I believe that day, a loving God, he planted a mustard seed of willingness to change it. With a mustard seed of willingness, you can move a mountain. And that was the day I don't want to live that life or die. And God rocked me to where I am tonight. So I got 1 minute and 15 seconds. And because this is a newcomer meeting, I just want to share this quick story. I have a grade eight education. I don't tell you that because I think I'm stupid. I'm telling you what AA and God's done in my life. So I like working with alcoholics and addicts. And what happened was I couldn't go back to school because, believe it or not, I have a bad memory. Like when I read the first line, by the time I get to the third line, I forget what the first line says. So what happened was the treatment center that I went to, the guy that was my counselor became the director, and he said, Jay, would you come back? Would you come here and try to see how you like it, and we can do something for you? And what happened? I went there, and then a few years later, a couple guys that I sponsor opened up a treatment center. And what I do is I do big book all day. I take people through the steps. We do workshops, and about 6 years ago, we had a workshop there, and there was a beautiful boy from Calgary, 27 years old. He had a beautiful wife, a beautiful little girl, and his mother lived in Newmarket, Ontario. And what happened was we had a great day of recovery. We got him a sponsor, and it was a holiday Monday. And I guess I got to stop, I guess, right? So
No,
I
please
might.
go on and finish. It's just
Yeah.
traumatic.
Okay. Yeah. So what happened was it was a holiday Monday, and what I do in the morning, I go knock on the doors, tell the clients to come down. So I knock on everybody's door. Everybody comes down except him. And I go to the washroom. I go to his room, and he hasn't slept in his bed. And I go to the washroom, and the washroom door is locked. And I knock on the door, and you know when you know, I break down the door, and I find him dead on the ground. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of that illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. And I haven't got time to finish this story, but I just want to say this. If there's anybody new, if there's anybody coming back, or if there's anybody struggling, please, please stay a little longer, try a little harder. And maybe the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous can happen for you. Maybe somebody you'll see, something you'll read, something you'll hear, and you can go on live meaningful, purposeful lives like so many of us do. Just keep coming because we're glad to see you. May God richly bless you all, and thank you for having me here today. Thank you very much.